Court will proceed to the fourth case, Empire Fire and Marine versus Sargent. Mr. Faultless.
Good morning. May it please the court. On August 29, 2003, the Ritchie family was out for a drive. They're coming back from the doctor's office. And Mr. Sargent came, left the center, hit some head on. He was intoxicated, driving at a high rate of speed. As a result of that crash, Rachel McVeigh died. Her child that was due to be born the very next day died. Karen Ritchie, her mother, had catastrophic injuries. Her sister, Monica Mitchell, MM, in the pleadings, had very serious injuries, and her daughter, who survived her, Bethany, also had very serious injuries. We're here today because Mr. Sargent purchased a supplemental liability policy when he rented the car from Enterprise that same day. The district court denied summary judgment. There was cross motion for summary judgment. The district court denied our motion, saying that there was no coverage for Mr. Sargent's acts. Within the policy, there was several exclusions. One of the exclusions in particular was called the imprudent manner exclusion. And that says that if you operate the vehicle, the rental vehicle, in an improper, imprudent manner, there's no coverage. Imprudent manner. So if you imprudently rear end somebody, there's no coverage.
Yeah, but there's the exclusion that says that if they're under the influence of narcotics, intoxicants, or drugs, that exclusion, that's pretty clear, isn't it?
Absolutely, unambiguous. Don't dispute it's there. But you have to read the entire contract as a whole. In Indiana, that is the cardinal rule of contract interpretation. You look at the whole contract, not just one provision. And when you look at the whole contract taken as a whole, it's illusory, because particularly with the imprudent manner exclusion. Every concept of driving a motor vehicle and being in an accident is imprudent. If you imprudently rear end somebody, run a stop sign, go too fast and lose control of your car, improperly yield the right-of-way, that's imprudently driving the vehicle. And that type of conduct is excluded underneath this policy. It's illusory because under no circumstance will benefits be paid. And insurance, particularly auto insurance, you buy it because you want protection when you're negligent. And Empire has effectively negated all circumstances in which coverage can be given with this imprudent manner exception. There is no circumstance in which you can be in an automobile accident and you operate your vehicle imprudently that they're ever going to provide coverage.
I think you have a very nice argument here on the negligent, the imprudent driving portions of the case, but it sort of seems like intoxication OAI exclusion is, I guess, pretty accepted here, and it's permissible under Indiana law and an excess policy to exclude coverage for something like that.
I would respond. I'm sorry.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought that in an excess policy in Indiana, you could exclude OAI situations.
In this transaction, you can't. This transaction involved a rental car. And rental car transactions are specifically regulated in the state of Indiana. That's 24-4-9-9. Dealing with these types of transactions. In that statute, the Indiana General Assembly actually allows intoxication exclusions in collision damage waivers. That's in the first party context. So if I'm driving my car down the road and I back into a fire hydrant and cause damage to the rear of the car, the collision damage waiver applies and says they're going to pay for that damage. If I do the same thing but I'm intoxicated, the statute actually permits them to have that exclusion in there, and that statute says, and as well as the exclusion in the policy would say, the collision damage waiver does not apply because we didn't agree to that risk. The General Assembly of Indiana did not permit in a rental car transaction for insurance companies to exclude coverage in a third-party context, which is exactly what we have here. This is a supplemental liability policy. It's dealing with third parties, innocent victims. In the collision damage waiver scenario, you're dealing with the person who committed the criminal and or illegal or imprudent act all at the same time. That person shouldn't get the benefit of their illegal criminal act by insuring against it. In this context, it's a third-party context, and the General Assembly did not allow this type of exclusion in a third-party context because I think they're wanting to protect innocent victims from harm, from drunk drivers and everybody else on the road who's operating their vehicle negligently. So I think in some other context, maybe that is accurate, but in this context, since the General Assembly has decided to act in this area and regulate rental car transactions, the type of exclusion that you're talking about with the alcohol exclusion, it in and of itself is against public policy. The other aspect of that is that in Indiana, if one provision is illusory, you can have a lot of other valid provisions in your contract or in your insurance policy that are very valid and very enforceable. But all of a sudden, if you have one provision that you overreach as an insurance company and you've excluded all, in essence, all culpability, all liability, you'll never have to indemnify anybody because this one provision is so broad and so all-encompassing, the policy as a whole is illusory. And when a policy is illusory, you then enforce the reasonable expectations of the insured. And even though the Indiana law is followed, Professor Keaton, Eli Lilly, the Indiana Supreme Court, as well as the Federal District Circuit Court of Appeals, followed this Keaton standard that says even though a painstaking study of the policy itself would negate the expectation, we're not going to hold people to reading very fine print, buried in the back of a document, and say, okay, that you should have read that fine print. Even though you're intoxicated and you drank a case of beer and you drank 4 to 6 ounces of Jim Beam, and you had your last beer 20 to 60 minutes before you rented the car, and it looks like it's a question of fact whether or not he appears intoxicated when he rents the car.
That's an interesting point. Irrespective of the contractual situation here, is there some tort liability for if, as you allege, the enterprise agent rented this car to a person who obviously appeared to be intoxicated. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's an allegation. Is there a tort remedy there?
There is a tort remedy, and there's a separate action that's pending in state court in Jefferson County, Indiana, dealing with that negligent entrustment of that car.
What's the status of that?
It's the paper discovery has been exchanged, and we're in the process of commencing deposition discovery. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Thoughtless. Mr. Farrell?
May it please the court. Despite the unfortunate circumstances of this accident, which left admittedly some people dead and maimed and without a great deal of recovery available through this rental car contract, we are nevertheless here today to discuss a very straightforward issue of contract law.
Yeah, but if this insurance contract that he bought would arguably exclude coverage if he, went through a stoplight or failed to yield right away or something like that, it seems like he wasn't buying anything here. And you could make that argument in any case if he was going 26 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. It was imprudent and shouldn't have been doing it, so there's no coverage.
You can certainly make that argument, Your Honor, and in fact, I think the appellants have made it and done quite a good job of it. But by my reckoning, what they've done is to take, they admit, even here today, there is a drunken driving exclusion, which is a thou shalt not solid exclusion. They don't deny that, and they're in violation of it, or Mr. Sargent was. However, they want to go and take these other phrases that are exclusions in this policy and read them in a way that would deny them coverage were they to seek coverage for having violated those phrases. And if you look at those phrases in their context, I think any court would come to the conclusion that there would be coverage for the sort of situation that you raise, Your Honor. For instance, when it says in a reckless or imprudent manner, or if the car is deliberately damaged, I would submit that that language is not equivalent to negligence, but is actually talking about something greater than negligence.
Well, deliberately damaged is another thing. But what would you say if this guy would have been sober as a judge, but been driving 75 miles an hour when this accident occurred? Would you claim, insurance companies like to get the premiums, but then when liability time comes, want to bail out? And I understand that. That's the way the system works. But what would you be saying then?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure what I'd be saying is what I think what is important is what a judge would be saying. And I think a judge, in reading the language, the imprudent language, or even the illegal purpose language, would, in the scenario that you have raised, would find coverage for that event because
I think it's very imprudent to drive 75 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. But I think if you read that language in its context, where it says in a reckless or imprudent manner, or if the car is deliberately damaged, I would interpret that language to be something more than mere negligence, to be something more than merely speeding or running a red light. It would be some sort of conscious indifference or some sort of intent. And by the same token, if I were reading the language for which appellants would like to focus on the word illegal, but the language that's actually in the contract is for any illegal purpose, which seems to say that there should be some intent behind that. If you're doing something that's illegal, that's one thing. But if you're doing something for an illegal purpose, I would think of using the car as an instrumentality for some sort of illegal act, such as trying to escape from a police officer or carrying illegal narcotics in your car. I think this language, while admittedly somewhat loose and using words that might be defined in such a way as the appellant has shown, that might deny coverage for merely negligent acts, I think just about any court would view this language in its context and apply coverage in the situations that you've raised, Your Honor. Now, the appellants want to say the coverage is illusory, and under Indiana law, when a premium is paid and there's no circumstances under which benefits could be paid, that would be illusory coverage. But that doctrine applies only to give effect to the objectively reasonable expectations of the insured. And in the situation we have here, the appellants have actually claimed that Mr. Sargent had a reasonable expectation of insurance while driving under the influence of alcohol. I would submit that the facts nor the law support that. Sargent has admitted that he tried to hide the fact that he'd been drinking when he went in to rent this car. He didn't think that the agent at the Enterprise would rent him the car if she knew that he'd been drinking. He admitted that he was told by the agent that there wouldn't be any coverage for illegal acts, and he was told by the agent not to drink and drive. He also admitted in his deposition that he knew it was okay. He knew it was not okay to drink and drive. So I don't know how he could have a reasonable expectation of insurance coverage given his own understanding of the situation when he went in to get the insurance and to get the car. Additionally, under Indiana law, a person such as Mr. Sargent can't be misled by a policy that he himself didn't take the time to read. Now, this exclusion for drinking and driving, which admittedly is very easily understood, appears in the policy itself, which obviously he did not see, but it also appears in the rental agreement and in a summary of coverage brochure that sits on the desk at the rental office. The appellants want to make a case that when you put this language in fine print on the back of a contract and expect somebody to read that and know that they wouldn't be covered for drinking and driving, well, By the same token, if we were to have provided a 60-page insurance policy, I'm sure somebody would find fault with that and say, who's going to read a 60-page insurance policy? At least when you have a contract that has the terms and conditions on the back of it, you can take it with you and look at it at your leisure. And that's what was provided to this gentleman when he left. Indiana law assumes that somebody who signs a contract has read it and understand it. There is nothing in Indiana law that would require this agent, even if she was Mr. Sargent's own insurance agent, to explain the language on the back of this policy to him. Consequently, I think Mr. Sargent has to be made responsible for his own acts, and we have a situation here where, as appellant's counsel pointed out, there is some statutory guidance in Indiana about whether you can exclude coverage for drinking and driving, but that statute applies only to minimum limits financial coverage, and Mr. Sargent was provided under Enterprise's own policy with the statutory minimum coverage of $25,000 per person and $50,000 per occurrence, which is required under Indiana law, and there's no exclusion for drinking and driving under that statutory minimum. However, there is no guidance in Indiana law, statutory or otherwise, as to whether a drinking and driving exclusion can apply in the context of excess insurances, which is what we have here today, in which the United States District Court found that it could conceive of circumstances, with all due respect to Your Honor, that under which there would be coverage under the terms and conditions of this policy, notwithstanding the exclusions that we talked about earlier, and found that the exclusion is viable and that there should be no coverage for this situation, for this accident. And I would urge the court to affirm that lower court's holding today.
Thank you very much. Farrell. Ms. Paulus?
You can help me on Indiana law. Is it required that there be some sort of link between the illusory language and the negligent act? In other words, you have a case here where you're relying on this illusory language, but it doesn't really have anything to do with the main reason for excluding liability here under the policy.
I've said several cases in my brief that say that when you are construing and interpreting an insurance contract in the state of Indiana, you have to read the entire provisions. You can't just pick and choose one relevant section and just apply that one section. So you have to read the contract as a whole.
So you can't say that parlance that we use in a lot of cases, in criminal cases, about harmless error, that this policy was unduly restricted and person really wasn't getting any coverage. However, clearly was not affected by that kind of language because there was a specific exclusion here that obviously fit the situation and he or anybody else would have known about.
The problem is illusory contracts in Indiana are against public policy. The insurance companies cannot do this type of activity in the state of Indiana. It's against public policy. And when they violate public policy, there's a consequence. Mr. Sargent, has he had a consequence? Absolutely. He pled guilty. He's serving time in prison for the next 11 and a half years. There has been absolutely no consequence for Empire's overreaching illusory contract that they crafted themselves. They only have themselves to blame for crafting it. They overreached. And if they simply took the time and carefully contract and draft language that's limited in nature, maybe they could do it. But they didn't. They overreached. They violated Indiana's public policy. And they should not profit from their wrongdoing. Mr. Sargent definitely is not profiting from his wrongdoing. He's simply asking that the court not allow Empire to profit from its wrongdoing because they violated Indiana's public policy. And Indiana says when you issue illusory insurance policies, the reasonable expectations of the insured apply. they sell this insurance policy as worry-free driving. And that was Mr. Sarge's expectation when he came out of the rental agency that day. It's worry-free driving.
But your argument is he was too drunk to even know that.
Absolutely. So. But he did remember because he testified to it. The discussion about the district court finding that there is some scope of coverage, the district court said that as long as Mr. Sargent operated the vehicle within the parameters of the law, there would be coverage. Well, if all of us operate within the parameters of the law, there's never going to be a negligent act, and there would never be coverage in the first place. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And
thank you, Mr. Paul. All right, thanks to all counsel. The case is